a privilege to get to be here because I'm getting to talk about two of my passions in life. One of my passions, besides teaching people about Christ, I mean, that's a given, right? But two of my passions are helping couples have healthy intimacy in their marriage. And another passion is teaching parents how to talk to their kids about healthy sexuality. So I'm going to ask y'all one of my favorite questions I love to ask groups that I speak to. How many of you in this room received healthy teaching from your parents about sex? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, about 15 in here. That's a pretty large number for a group this size. Go parents, yay y'all. For the rest of you, would it have been helpful for your parents to have spoken to you about sex? Like, would there have been any time you can think of going back through your childhood in history that it might have been a little helpful to have known something? I remember one woman tell me she's 13, and that when she was 13, her mother asked her, "Do you have any questions about sex?" She said, "I knew by the tone of her voice my answer needed to be no, so I said no." And she said, "Debbie, I knew nothing." And that was the only talk I got with my mom about sex. So I want to just encourage you and inspire you. If you came here today at all a little anxious about this topic, or a little anxious about having conversations with your kids, whatever age they are, I want you to leave here with an excited anticipation. That you'll just be excited, anticipating an opportunity to get to have healthy dialogue with your kids. So my next question is, how many of you have kids that are like infants, toddlers? Okay, quite a few. Elementary. Oh, fun ages. Junior high. God bless your hearts. We'll pray for y'all. And high schoolers. College students. Okay, we're going to have fun. I promise we're going to have fun. Now, I did ask Dave as we were walking here. You know, I went to the service in the church we attend. It's not quite as traditional as this. And I remember Dave and Daniel heard me speak. And I said, "Now, Dave, you know I'm used to using, like, anatomically correct terminology, right? And that's going to be okay on Sunday morning." He said, "Yeah, that's what you're here for." I said, "Okay, I'm good to go." So real quick, so you know, just a little about where I'm coming from. I was raised in a Southern Baptist preacher's home, so please do not believe everything you hear about preacher's kids. It's not all true. But I was raised by a mom and dad who did teach me a love for the Lord, which I'm just so thankful for that they taught me we can have a true personal relationship with Jesus Christ from a young age all the way through life. And I'm so thankful they modeled that for me. And another precious gift that my parents taught my sister and I is healthy sexuality from very young ages, and have kept that conversation on the table all the way up through adulthood. Like, I don't want to freak any of you out, but my 86-year-old father is here, and I have known all my life that he and my mother had a very precious, beautiful, wonderful, sexual, intimate relationship. They've always given me permission, so I'm not outing him. But they had a healthy relationship all the way up until my mother became ill and we lost her in December of 2014 to cancer. I just love that. Now, my husband will still go, "Debbie, you think that's so cute, but when you talk about that, I don't want mental pictures." So that's okay. But I just want you to know, if any of you feel uncomfortable, let this be a start of changing. Like, if you had the generation of parents that didn't know how to do this, that's why they didn't share it with you. And it's because their parents probably didn't share it with them and they didn't know how either. Let's don't let that tradition continue. Let's change that so that you can have healthy dialogue with your kids. As a marriage and family therapist, what kept walking into my office working with couples, it didn't matter what issue they were bringing into their office, it was impacting their sexual relationship. Really, I would often find that it was their sexual intimacy issue that was really the issue, but they just couldn't walk in and say that. It is so significant in our relationships. So I went through a certification to become a certified sex therapist so I would know how to help the couples. And then in working with sexual intimacy issues, one of the things that impedes intimacy so much in this day and age is sex addiction, pornography addiction, and sexual addiction. So then I went to be certified in that so I'd know how to work with that as it's walking in. And I say that because I know sexual issues are so significant and powerful in our lives. And if we didn't know how to talk about sexuality and have healthy ideas about it as kids, then we grow up into teenagers that don't know how to deal with all the stuff that's in front of us. And then we go into single adults and into marriage and not being able to talk about it with our spouse. So if I have identified any of significance or struggle areas for you, I at least want to help y'all start and begin having a better idea of healthy sexuality. So there's four words I want you to think through as we talk about this, because I think this is so important, thinking of our sexuality. These are four words that I think are important as God wants us dealing with ourselves as sexual beings and about sex itself. But he wants us to feel, I think, liberated and not held in captivity or bondage by sexuality. He wants us to live liberated in it. He also wants us to, I think, be educated in it. We've got to be informed and educated. And we've got to be educated so we can educate our kids. And so that they grow up and they're kind of educated. I think also he wants us to deal with sexuality in a way that's so different from our culture. He wants it to be elevated. We've got to realize that our sexuality is so entwined with sacredness and spirituality. You wouldn't know that from our culture. So we have to know how it needs to be elevated. And then I truly think something that we've not done well as Christians or have encouraged couples, we also want it to be celebrated. Especially in marriages where it was designed for. So I just want you to kind of think on those terms as we talk about the things we're talking about. So I'm starting with the liberated piece first. Because that, if we don't get this part, if I can't kind of penetrate at this part, then I think I'll lose you the rest of the hour. I don't know of anywhere in our area of living that we can carry more sexual sin, sexual guilt, sexual shame than dealing, shame and guilt and sin than dealing with our sexuality. And so we have to be willing to recognize what it is that God wants us to do with that. And so I'm going to walk you through five R words that I think are so important, and they're scripturally based. And God just kind of gave me these one time. My husband's a home builder, and I think our jobs are really very similar. He gets to work on the external components of the home, you know, all the materials, and I get to work with the internal components of the home, the people. And we have lived in several houses that we have remodeled. Not all fun, but it's a good experience. But we have lived in these houses, and we've literally had people come and knock on our door and go, "Is that ugly little red brick house still really in the middle of this house?" And I just looked at it one day and thought, "Oh, wow. This is such a great metaphor and a visual. If this is what man's hands can do with the buildings and homes, oh, it's amazing what I see in my office of what God's hands can do when he's working with our individual lives, in our couple lives, in our family lives." Because my belief is often it's because of things that maybe have happened to us or maybe choices that we made along the way. We feel that some things have been torn down for us. And I want you to know the first R word is rebuild. God is about rebuilding in our life. So if there is anything in our life that's happened, especially sexually along the way, somebody was violating, somebody didn't recognize boundaries, we didn't know how to set boundaries, or we just made rebellious choices. and we feel like somehow we have torn something down, I want you to know God's about rebuilding it. I've given you scripture references. I want you to look those up, but just due to time, I'm not going to walk through all of those. And you can probably find more than what I've given you. He's also about reclaiming. You know, sometimes I feel like we come to God with, this is all I've got left, or remnants. And in Isaiah 11:11, he said he reached in and he reclaimed the remnants of his people and he rebuilt a nation. And I work with people who go, ah, all I've got are these remnants. All that's left of our marriage is remnants. Oh, Debbie, if you knew my childhood, my teen years, what I did in college, all I have is remnants. And I love it. God is about helping us reclaim the remnants in our life. And maybe we've made choices that have distorted our sexuality, not as God intended, but we kind of did our own way with it. And he's like, I can help you reclaim that for how I originally designed it. He's also about redeeming. I love this. God doesn't cause all things, but he allows all things. And we have to reconcile that somewhere in our life. How could a loving, gracious, compassionate God actually allow some of the things he allows? And it's so important, especially with our sexual being and knowing if he allowed something, he can redeem it. So many of the couples that I work with that are choosing to work and make their marriage work after many infidelities from sexual addiction, it's amazing to see the redemptive work that God will do in those. He's also a God who restores. And I know many of you may feel like, again, somewhere along the way, something got stolen from you. And again, maybe at the hands of somebody else, maybe because of choices, maybe because of unexpected things like difficulty in a sexual relationship in marriage when you did everything right. And you get to marriage and you're having sexual conflict. And it's not the great gift that everybody said it was going to be. And you may feel like something's been stolen from you. And we serve a God who restores. And then I'm willing to bet you've never heard this word put with sexuality before, but here it goes. He also resurrects. And I think that's so important because, again, often we may feel that we're sexually dead. I hear that from men and women, mainly women, but not always women. Sometimes it's the men. Debbie, my desire, nothing. Don't even think about it. Like some people say, it's the last thing on your mind. It's not there. It feels dead to me. Or men, maybe because again, choices along the way or things that happen that feel sinful if I go there. So I've just had to make it be dead. But we have a God that is about resurrecting. And so those are some promises that I want you to hold on to because I don't know where I meet you this morning, but God does. So he knows what may have to take place in your life to have a liberated belief and sense of identity in your sexuality in order to tell your kids. Because one of my favorite quotes of a mentor of mine is, you can't lead where you won't go and you can't teach what you don't know. And so if we are wanting to teach our kids that sex is something that's a beautiful thing designed by God and we don't believe it, oh, your teenagers are going to so see through you. We've got to make sure that we have found this liberated place in our life and we've got to look at what it is for us in order for us to share something good and beautiful with our kids. So I just want to walk you through some things that may help you do that. Did you get my notes? She's got my notes. It's got a lot of purple, blue, turquoise writing. Did somebody else get my notes? Oh. Did leave the okay. Left them in the bag. Okay, so I want to walk you through just ways to get comfortable and confident for you. And these are not things that I'm going to fill in the blank for you. These are things that I'm going to support you, that spending some time with yourself and then being willing to risk share with your spouse. When you think about it, look at your own sexual history and what were your beliefs about sex when you were a child. What was demonstrated for you? What were the sexual messages? But what was your view and belief about sex as a child? And then another good, healthy question to be able to talk through and write and be honest with yourself is, if you think about 10 years ago, what were your views and beliefs about sex 10 years ago? And then what are your views and beliefs about sex now? And if they've changed from 10 years ago, what influenced that? What changed that thinking? And are your beliefs and views, it's important, are they negative? Or are they positive? Are you in this place that you really believe God designed us as sexual beings for our good and our benefit and for His glory? Are you still confused about the whole thing? Because some of us, sex is really complicated. Can I just say that? And dealing with our sexuality is really complicated. And we think that something that's so natural would not be so complicated. So that's important for you to be honest about. And then another, if your beliefs are negative, where do those messages come from? And then are you willing to do some reading or some talking to get to a different belief? Because if you have negative beliefs about sex, you cannot teach positive, healthy sexuality to your kids. And then if your beliefs are negatives, what have been the barriers? What are the barriers for you? And that's just so important. But I would encourage you to do that individually. And then you and your spouse be willing to come alongside and share that with one another. Because teaching your kids about sex is a partner thing. It's for you to do together. Men, it's not just a mom's job. It's something that kids need that from both of you. Women, there are some things that you can teach your sons about sexuality. They need to hear it from a female perspective. But men, your sons need healthy modeling from you. I think one of the saddest things I deal with is working with adults that have carried shame since childhood, all through teen years, all through adulthood, still carry shame about something that was natural. And sexual responses are natural. God designed men that they would have nocturnal emissions or wet dreams. Young boys will start experience that in puberty. I could not count on both hands how many men I've worked with that still carry shame about that because somehow a mother, an aunt, or a grandmother shamed them. They didn't know it was natural and that it would happen. And no males told them about it. Men, your boys need to hear from you. And as much as my mom could pour into me about modesty or dressing, it was my father, though, that helped me understand how the way we dress as women affect men. And you're right, I thought he was old when I was a kid. You're old, what do you know? It's like, well, I used to be 16 too, you know? So this is kind of funny, I will share this. So I grew up in the 70s, and you know, now we have all this different kind of style of clothes, and you can have Bermuda shorts, and you can have cutoffs, and you can have walking shorts, and you can have capris, you know what I mean? You've got all kinds. Well, back in the 70s, you either had jeans or cutoffs that were like hot pants, right? So you know when churches do mission trips and they save money for car washes, you know? And y'all seen them on the side. You know, the girls, how they dress, washing cars. My dad wouldn't let my sister and I wear shorts to wash cars in. We were the only two girls out there in jeans. I don't think it bothered me much, though. I mean, I think I kind of got over it. No. I don't know that I would make that same decision because we have a lot of other choices now. But he wanted us to know, he was willing to be the uncool parent to go, you're not crawling in and out of cars in front of 16-year-old boys. 17-year-old boys washing cars in short cutoffs. Sort of, kind of got it then, but not really. But oh, I get it now. So you may have to risk in some way being a little uncool. I don't think wearing blue jeans for car washes is what you need to have your girls do. But you have to be willing to draw the line. So I want to read from you in Deuteronomy because this is so important for you to understand that you are the most significant sex educator in your child's life. So this is in Deuteronomy 6, and I'm going to read it from the Message translation. I just love this translation for this passage. Deuteronomy 6:6-9. Write these commandments that I've given you today on your hearts. Get them inside you and then get them inside your children. Talk about them wherever you are, sitting at home or walking in the street. Talk about them from the time you get up in the morning to when you fall in bed at night. Now, I realize that he is talking about the commandments of the Lord. But I also believe that when we look at the fact that God designed us as sexual beings with such sexual power and desires are so strong, that we need to think about this as we must put good, healthy information into our kids' lives starting at an early age. And I love what, again, here's where I use one of Chuck Swindoll's quotes. I love this insight about this passage. It says, home is indeed where life makes up its mind. It is there with fellow family members. We hammer out our convictions on the anvil of relationship. It is there we cultivate the valuable things in life, like attitudes, memories, beliefs, and most of all, character. And when we talk to our children about healthy sexuality, we're not just talking about body parts and anatomy and the how-tos. We're teaching them character. Because they're going to need to know that they've got to have value and character applied to their sexuality. And they will have to all their lives. And I'm going to walk you through some ways in how to do that. So why should parents be the ones to talk about sex to the kids besides the fact that God kind of gave you the privilege? What are some other reasons? They did a study and it said that 80% of kids say they wish their parents would talk to them about sex. And the same study revealed that only about 20% do. Don't you want to be a part of changing that? That you would be the one that stands up and you are able to say, in fact, I'm going to have y'all repeat after me, okay? I am the most significant sex educator in my kid's life. Now, did y'all just repeat after me or you really believe it? I mean, that is something you've really got to believe. Because what we're up against with culture, you will think everybody else has a bigger say. But I promise you, from the sexual histories that I've taken over and over and over and have had the privilege of walking through with individuals and couples, it's the ones that never received any healthy sex education from their parents that feel they were kind of cheated or gypped out of having an opportunity to be equipped and skilled to deal with what was ahead of them. So, again, three more words to think about. I want you to think about this is an opportunity for you to be educated so you can educate your kids. So often when I speak, they go, oh, but isn't this interrupting our child's innocence? No, it's preventing ignorance. You don't want your child to be ignorant. And if you are giving them healthy teaching, it's not ruining anything about their innocence. It's being helpful and beneficial. So they're equipped. It's about being equipped as a parent to equip your kids. I mean, we wouldn't ever put a football team out on the football field and go at it. I mean, we know you've seen it before. Go ahead, try it out. We wouldn't send people off to war without equipping them. We wouldn't send kids off to college without equipping them. We wouldn't let them start driving without equipping them. So we've got to equip them to deal with the battles that they're going to have sexually. And then you also want to be empowered so you can empower your kids. So often kids can't be empowered because they didn't know that they could set boundaries. Nobody ever told them they could and ever demonstrated how. And so we want to empower them that with the boundaries and the equipment, they can make some healthy decisions even if their friends aren't. Right? Okay. So some of these paragraphs I'm not going to read through again for the sake of time, but I do want you to read that about sexual neglect. Because sexual neglect is when we just don't mention sex at all to kids. When kids have been neglected in getting and receiving healthy information about sexuality. Most of the addicts that I work with will name one of their number one traumas is having no sexual education from their parents. Please be willing to read that and pay attention. You don't want your kids to be neglected from having good, healthy information. So what if parents don't talk to the kids about sex? Well, then the culture will shape their value system. They will assume that your silence means that sex is either too bad to talk about. Oh, too bad. It's taboo. Can't mention it. Or that you're indifferent or inadequate to help them in the area of sexuality. So if they think you're inadequate, are they going to come to you with their questions? No. If you seem uncomfortable and stutter and can't do it, they're not coming to you. That's why I want to help you be confident. Also, if you don't talk to them, teams will form conclusions based on their own imaginations, desires, fear, or peer influences. God made us with creative imaginations, so do you think we can imagine us some things? Do you think your teens might be able to imagine some things that might not be very holy or sacred or good for them? If you don't talk, they will also have an increased vulnerability to become sexually active or victims of sexual assault. They need your wisdom, and they need your guidance. So some of the concepts that we want to impart in teaching kids, first and foremost, we want them to know that sex is good and of God. Now, if you have a hard time buying that, I'm going to refer you back to Genesis. And in Genesis, when it says that he made man and woman, he made them in his image, both male and female. And if you read in Psalm 139, it says we were knitted together in our mother's womb. So that means that God knew us and fully formed us, both male and female. And he sat back and looked at it and said what? It's what? It's what? Very good. Not just good, it's very good. Some translations say absolutely good. Now, this is usually for a different talk, but you know, when I'm talking for couples on sexual intimacy, but I think it's even so important here when we look at the design of our bodies and how intricately we were made, and do we want to believe that God really designed us as sexual beings for our good? He designed women with a clitoris that serves no other function than for us to have orgasm. No other function. But just for ecstasy and a feel good. I didn't even get an amen. I mean, think about that for a minute. How cool is that? That he would design us in such a way that we experience all kind of wonderful feelings and emotions and physiologically are wired to enjoy something. We get to be co-creators with him, and that's cool. But isn't it kind of also cool that every time we have sex, we don't get pregnant? Just every time. I mean, there's a lot of benefit in just being able to show amazing love to our spouse. So it is good and it is of God. Another thing we have to have them know is that sexual curiosity is natural. And you may need to know that in case there's anything in that back, again, that's keeping you from being liberated, because you can remember a time that you saw something or were aroused or had a great feeling or you kept going back to looking at something or curiosity kept taking you a little further and further. Curiosity is natural. And this is why it's so important in our day and age, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more in detail, on why we have to introduce the idea of pornography to children at a younger and younger age, that they know what it is, and so how they can turn against it. Because we live in a technical society that if they have any sort of device that's connected to the internet, your kids can get to pornography. And used to, about everything that you would read would say that the average age that children were exposed to pornography was about age 11. Not so now. I find it's more like 5, 6, 7 that is first exposure. I've already worked with many little kids already addicted to pornography. Little girls, 9. Boys 7, 10, 11, 12, that's already a habit. Do not tune me out if you have little ones thinking mine are precious, they wouldn't look. They are precious, but we are curious. And when we're exposed to something that's shocking and intriguing and fascinating and makes our body have kind of a response to it, we can't help it. We kind of want to go back and see it again. We adults are not so different, right? We need to help them know it's natural, but because that natural curiosity is theirs, why we need to be more protective and help them have the boundaries to stand up against what they know is not okay. We also must teach them that sexual responsiveness is automatic. Again, it's natural. Again, one of the things that I feel so sad about is when I work with someone that they realize that something they did either out of curiosity or was exposed to or saw, that their body responded to it. And they were aroused and they tingled and were all over. And they feel so much shame. We've got to teach our kids, they've got to know the way that God wired us, the way he designed us, that we are going to have a reflexive response We are going to have a response to some things that feel exciting and arousing. May make your body tingle all over, especially in your private parts. And that is natural. It's going to happen. Because why did God design for us to be aroused? Okay, if that's a hard question for you, let me ask this one. Men, if you were not aroused, how easy would intercourse be? I'm still not getting responses, but not very easy, huh? Women, if you were not aroused, and men, pay attention to this, please. Women, if you were not aroused, how comfortable is sex? So why do we have natural sexual responses to arousal? God designed us to become aroused so that one day we could participate in a God-given, beautiful way in having sex. But it's not a switch that we turn on when we hit the wedding day. Okay, God, that switch you have for me, let's flip it on. No, we've had to deal with it all of our lives until we get. And it's teaching our kids, you will have this, and you're going to have to find a way to manage and navigate it. And we want to teach healthy discipline, not repression. Our church is mainly, when I say our church, you know, I mean just church in general, right? Not here, but church in general. We've kind of taught repression, sexual repression, instead of sexual discipline. And we want to begin those conversations early. Also, we need to teach that sexual responsibility belongs to each and every individual person. We have to have some responsibility of our own bodies. Now, would that be important in families and siblings knowing that for one another? It'd be real important that we understand healthy boundaries and responsibility about protecting one another sexually. Mutual respect and biblical standards are also the guideline for all sexual decisions. Again, that's why we want our kids grounded in truth and understanding that our sexuality has a sacredness to it. And if we just leave it for the cultural to teach them, that's not the message they will hear from the culture. What I think is so interesting in my certification for sex addiction training, which my sex therapy training was done all by a faith-based program by the American Board of Christian Sex Therapists. My sex addiction training, it was not done necessarily by a faith-based program. It's kind of nationally and internationally known, but it's the one I went through. I think it's so interesting on how in many times they will try to separate sexuality and spirituality, but yet the founder of it, Patrick Carnes, is one who says that our sexuality and our spirituality are so intertwined. They really can't be separated. Now, he's not the first person to say that. That's how God designed it. But I just think it's interesting that the founder of a secular organization even recognizes that. That our spirituality and our sexuality are so tied. So what's important when we begin talking to our kids? Here's where I'm going to walk in through some of the how-tos. And I'll stop at 12. Okay. So here's some of the things that we do. We want to begin the dialogue when they're young. And if you think it's hard to start talking to your kids when they're young, I mean, think about it. 3-, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds. What do they think of you as parents when you tell them something? It's true. Mom and Dad said it. It's true. They're the dispensers of wisdom. If they tell me, I can believe it. They hit about 10 and a half, 11, 12, 13. What do kids think of their parents? Yeah, I'm not sure that they're dealing with the full deck of cards because I learned more on the internet than what they're telling me. So see, when you start those conversations when they're young, people say, well, how young? Well, I say begin those conversations so that you can practice saying it. If they're infants and you're changing diapers and you're able to say, because they don't know what you're saying, infants only listen to tone of voice, and you're able to say, oh my goodness, you're such a beautiful little girl. Look how God made your hair and your eyes and your nose. And he designed you with a vagina and a vulva, and it's just so precious. You are just a beautiful little girl. Not to be confused with a Volvo. You'll want to drive one of those later, but it's a vulva. Oh, my, what a handsome little boy you are. You're going to grow up to be a man of God. And God made you with ears and strong arms and nose and a penis and a scrotum. Oh, you were designed with magnificent parts. I remember when my nephew, I tell him I use this story. He said, just don't say my name. So, okay, we'll call him John because John is now a lawyer. But when John was 2, his parents would go, John, where are your toes? John, where's your nose? John, where are your ears? John, where's your penis? John, where's your elbows? John, where's your shoulders? To John, it was all one part. No shame. And I just love that. That we teach young that to be proud of their bodies. Now, some good friends of mine were caring for their 4-year-old. And she said, Debbie, I just have to tell you the story. But he was in the car seat in the back, and they were driving. And he's going along, and she can tell he's just back there thinking and playing. And he says, Nana, you know what? And she said, what? He said, God made my penis. She said, well, yes, he certainly did. You know, he also made your ears and your toes and your eyes and your nose. He did all that too. Uh-huh. Nana, know what? What? I like my penis the best. So we want to teach young, and we want to use anatomically correct terminology. I really think the reason we come up with all these little kitty names and all these little things is because we're too embarrassed to say the real names. So we come up with all these kitty language to use for our own comfort, which in some way suggests that we feel ashamed or embarrassed to say those words. And there's a lot of reasons, especially young children, that need to know the correct term. So when they need help, we know what they're talking about. I got to do a similar presentation to this to a MOPS group in California. And one of the women came up to me and said, I am just so glad you teach that and to hear a professional really teach it. She said, I picked my son up in the first grade the other day, and the teacher said, we really need to talk with you about the language your son is using on the playground. And I thought, oh my gosh, what language is my son using on the playground? They said, well, he got kicked with a ball, and he went around, and he kept saying, I got, the ball hit me in my penis. So she looked at the teacher, and she said, what would you like for us to teach him to call it? And the teacher was kind of numb for a minute. And she said, this woman talking to me, she said, and I looked at that teacher and I said, last year there was a little girl in kindergarten that kept trying to tell the teachers that little boys were snatching her cookies. And nobody would listen to her. And she said, Debbie, it came out that the cookie snatching, where what was being snatched, it was older boys that were fondling her vagina. And she said, I made the decision then, I will never use silly terminology. So, I'm going to give you a little bit of an out. If it's just so hard for you to keep using anatomically correct terminology, you at least teach that to them. Read it in books. If if you don't know how to have that dialogue yet, I mean, I'm going to introduce you to some books, but if you just need to read the child's book first to begin saying it and practicing it, you know, driving in the car and looking in the rearview mirror and seeing if your face changes, if you say penis or scrotum or vagina, do you stutter or do you wince or do you, you know, practice saying it. But if it's so uncomfortable, at least teach it and then go, that's the correct one, but what we're going to call it around here is a bobo. Is that okay? But I really don't recommend that either, and I've got another story on that, but I'll move on. So we also need to celebrate the differences between males and females. We need our little girls and our little boys to know that they are dynamic and wonderful however God made them, and that little girls aren't just made for beauty. I mean, certainly your daughters need to hear from you, both mothers and fathers. They need to hear from you that you think they're beautiful on the outside, but they also need to hear that you think they're beautiful on the inside. And God is interested in our outer appearance when we're doing our best before Him, but He's interested in our heart, as the message was earlier. I love how Dr. Swindoll was speaking of that it's our heart. It flows from the heart, and our little girls need to know that they're valuable and delighted in. As little girls, not as sexual objects. And we need to celebrate those differences. And little boys and little girls are different. And we want to help them to delight in that. We also need to know how to deal with awkward moments, that we want to respond, not react. Those questions are going to come to you, and you want to make sure that what comes out of your mouth is a response such as, wow, that's a good question. I want to make sure I have a really good answer. Will you let me think on that a little bit, and I'm going to get back to you. You don't want to go, what? Where did you hear that? We don't use that word. Oh my gosh, who have you been hanging out with? You'll scare them to death and they'll never ask you a question again. And we want to keep the conversation on the table always. I work with a lot of women who have pain with intercourse. And I finally got together a group of them to meet, and they sat across from other women for the very first time, talking with other women, hearing all of the thoughts and the things that they had fought in their head, and the battle and the emotional pain as well as the physical pain, never having to get healthy dialogue with other women. And one of the women shared that she said, the day that Debbie called and left the message that she was doing the group with 15 women, she said, I was over at my mother's house, and my mother had shared, my mother was asking questions like, when are y'all going to start having kids? You know, we'd really like grandkids. We really want y'all to make sure you get started on your family. And she said, I looked at her and finally said, she said, I've never had a conversation about sex with my mom. And I looked at my mom and said, Mom, you have to stop asking me questions like that. It's just so emotionally painful. She said, you have no idea what we're dealing with. But she said, I experience pain with intercourse, and we're not able to have it. And when I do, it's excruciating, and I'm working on it. And she said, the minute she said that, her mother fell over and just cried and cried and said, I've dealt with that for 40 years, and I didn't know anybody else experienced that. She said, my therapist is having a group of women, 15 women. And her mother looked at her and said, she knows 15 women who struggle with pain? It's never too late for us to have conversations. But if we can get them on the table early and have those conversations all the way in adulthood. So, I'm going to push back on a light moment for a minute. This is a cute little clip I want to show real fast on a person that I think does a good job at responding, not reacting.
Spinach, 3 eggs, 2 large aubergines, 6 small courgettes. Oh, and Fontina cheese.
Mummy?
Yes, darling?
What's virgin mean?
Sorry, darling?
What does virgin mean?
Girls and boys, I mean grown-ups, bodies are different, but they're made to fit together in a very clever way, like a jigsaw.
Like the jigsaws Grandpa does?
Yes. I mean, no. When a mummy and a daddy love each other a lot, then sometimes they like to show each other just how much they love each other.
Does Daddy give Mummy a present?
Sort of.
What kind of present?
Daddy has a special thing, and so has Mummy. And when Mummy and Daddy want to make something very special, to make a baby, then Daddy takes his special thing and puts it in Mummy's special place.
Winchester?
No.
The shoe shop?
No, darling. A special place on Mummy's body. And that makes Mummy feel very happy. Makes Daddy feel happy as well. And eventually, after a while, sometimes quite quickly, Daddy gets so happy, there's a sort of whoosh and an explosion, and all Daddy's little seeds shoot out and race to get to Mummy's egg. And that's called making love. Anyway, until you do it for the first time, you're, well, a virgin. I think that just about covers it.
So, what's extra virgin mean?
We want our kids to ask us questions. We want to be the one. Right? We just want to make sure we know what they're asking. Be a little helpful. So I just want to walk through a little bit what the Penners use as helping kids in mastering sexual development. And you just having a little idea of what this looks like and plays out over the years. But, you know, in infancy, it's really about bonding. But that's why intimacy... It really begins, though, in intimacy. It's that attachment, and it's that voice, and it's being present, and it's the facial expressions. But that is, too, part of sexual development, because it's part of building. It's the foundational piece of beginning our capacity for intimacy. And in our toddler years, what we need to know is that in the toddler years, what they are learning is the touching and the naming and kind of control of genitals, and what the parent's role is to be affirming and feelings as God's special design, and again, using correct terminology. When we see little kids with their hands in their diapers or in their britches or touching themselves, we don't ever want to do something like get your hands out of your pants or quit touching that or that's nasty. That all implies that that's something wrong with that. When little, in more preschool age, a little older, when we start seeing them taking naps and maybe they're rubbing themselves to go to sleep, or they're, you know, you might see a little girl watching TV, she's sitting on her heel or sitting on the side of a table, or little boys playing with themselves. Why are they doing that? It feels good! And what do we do when something feels good? We go back to doing it. So they're not doing that because they're nasty or dirty or something's going on. It feels good. But do we want them to have discipline around it? Absolutely. But we don't need to shame them in the process. Hey, honey, I know you just got your hands in your pants again. I know you kind of feels good. Remember how we talked about our private parts and body parts, and God made us that we have good feelings and stuff? So I know you do that, and it really feels good. But you know what? We just don't always want to just do something because it feels good. Chocolate cake tastes good, but we don't eat it at every meal. We don't eat it all the time. We eat it every once in a while. We want them to know there's other things that they can do, but we don't want to shame what we see them doing. So in this process, again, I gave you the examples of kind of naming the body parts and using correct terminology and validating that they're good. And we want kids in those toddler years and preschool years to feel affirmed in their body. I was speaking at another church for a MOPS group, and I got on the elevator, and there was a woman and a little girl that was there. And I said, "Oh, how old are you?" And the mom went, "No, remember you just had a birthday?" She's three. I said, "So you're three?" And she said, "Mm-hmm." And I said, "You're darling." She said, "No, Ella." Now, what I sense in that, she had an ego strength. I couldn't just call her anything. She'd not heard darling. She didn't know that as a compliment, but she corrected me. And I think that that's what we want to take into just identifying our healthy sense of self and our healthy sense of our sexuality. That our kids know that they are designed in a healthy image of God. Now, I did have a guy tell me, he said, when they were having their conversation with his nephew and his parents had told him everything, and you know, kids have imagination. So he told me, he said, "Yeah, I'm getting it that God is a big God." He said, "Like, he's bigger than the world, right?" It's like, "Yeah." "He's bigger than clouds, right?" "Yeah, he's bigger than clouds." I mean, again, little five-year-old. I mean, he's then a big God. And he made us like him. So he must have a really big penis. Now, that's not sacrilegious. That is a child taking his creative imagination, and he's trying to grab the concept, if I'm made in his image and God's a big God and God knows all my body parts, then he kind of had to go, "My goodness." And we want kids to have the confidence with that, no shame. Before the fall, Adam and Eve stood naked and unashamed. And this is what we want our kids in these toddler years, in these preschool years, to completely understand. Naked and unashamed. And we do want to teach them that anything that is covered up with the bathing suit is a private part. And they're called private parts because they're special and good, not because they're dirty and nasty. And God made our private parts with special purpose. When we grow up, our private parts for us as females come together with the private parts of the males. Remember how I've told you that little girls are designed with vaginas and a vulva area. It's the area between your legs. And little boys are designed with penises and a scrotum. And that's also important too. And the reason God designed that is so when men and women grow up to become husbands and wives, and they want to become mommies and daddies, they can show each other how much they love each other. And God designed it so cool that these private parts, the penis and the vagina, can come together. And we get to be co-creators with God. I mean, how cool is that? And if they can get that concept, and again, I've given you a list of a lot of really good books to start that concept, those ideas with them when they're little. So as your conversation in school age and preschool and adolescence become a little more complicated, you've already set that foundation that character has to be a part of their sexual value system. On how they're going to treat one another, what they're going to be exposed to. I read a really sad quote by a 16-year-old, was interviewed by a gal that does a lot of work with teens. And she said, "You know, we girls struggle in this culture of being so sexualized and with pornography." And she said, "Most of the time, opposites, if you have something that's an opposite, you have something that's bad and the opposite is good." But she said, for we as girls, If we're not having sex, we're seen as prudes. If we are having sex, we're seen as sluts. Where's our good place? And we want our girls to have value in who they are, and that we can be sensual in our image as females without having to be seductive. That we can be pretty and exude in our femininity without being sexualized, or being able to set those boundaries if we feel we are being sexualized. You want to be able to prepare pre-adolescence, the puberty, we want to prepare them on the body changes that their bodies are going to be going through. We want to help them to understand that those responses that they have felt through the years, that when their hormones are raging, will be pretty powerful and strong. We want to be able to deal with those hard topics with them. And I'm going to just use two different, it's all the same thing, but two different names. When we see children self-stimulating, they're doing that because it feels good. They're not having sexual images. They are not necessarily doing it for sexual pleasure. They're just doing it because it feels good. We need to help our preteens understand that as they go through puberty and their hormones are raging, when they stimulate themselves and when they begin putting images with that, or start thinking of others or sexual things, and they're still stimulating themselves, it is what we refer to as masturbation. That's what we want to help our kids understand, that so much of what sexuality is, it's teaching of protecting the heart, and it's also being disciplined in the mind and where we allow our thoughts to go. And so, men, when you talk to your sons and you are able to have, see how positive I said that? You are able to have a conversation with them about masturbation. You can say to them, "Oh, son, be careful where you allow your mind to go. This is something that is going to feel good and you're going to be tempted and you're going to want to do it. I want to help you to know to be disciplined in it." I would use the passage with them in 1 Corinthians 6:12, where it says, "Everything's permissible, but not everything's beneficial. Everything's permissible, but I will not be mastered by anything." Anything that we set to as a habit, as a result to, I have to, whether it's releasing for stress or releasing for tension or releasing because I saw the girl next door, releasing, anything we put in such habit, we can become mastered by. And I just want to caution you and help you to protect yourself against being mastered by a habit. We also need to have those same conversations, women, with our daughters. I was sitting and talking with a bunch of pastors, and we were having a conversation for sexuality, and they had asked for a lot of questions to come in. And the pastor was so honest. He said, "I couldn't believe all the questions that came in about masturbation from women." He said, "I guess I didn't think they did." So we want to be able to have those conversations also with our daughters and help them to know the feeling, the want to is natural. It's going to come. But just like that, we want them to be disciplined in that as with anything else. I already mentioned to you that we live in the society about pornography, and I think we have to have those conversations about protecting against pornography when our kids are much younger than now, and it could sound something like this. You know how we've taught you that our bodies are designed by God and sexuality is a good thing and a beautiful thing? He designed men to want to look at women and women to be attracted to men, but not everybody in our society thinks the way we do, and there's some people that make movies with men and women, or take pictures of nudity, or you may have some of your friends that are going to want you to text a picture of them. And all of that is really called pornography or sexting. And let me just tell you, it's going to be curious, and you're going to kind of want to see it. I just want to tell you, it can be real dangerous if you feed that curiosity. And sweetie, if anything ever comes up or somebody shows you something or introduces you to something when you're over at their house or on the school campus, please know you can come and talk to me and let me know. You won't be in trouble. I just want to help protect you. Because not everybody sees sexuality as sacred the way that we do. That's how we're going to have to handle homosexuality and the transgender issues that are surrounding us. We let our kids know. We help them be informed. We live in this world. We just don't have to be of the world. And we need them to know there will be people who do not believe and have the same value system we do about sexuality. And they may not feel comfortable in their bodies, and they don't get it, how God designed them uniquely. And they may want to be in a opposite gender body. We will treat those people with kindness and respect. In dealing with homosexuality, that probably some of my favorite family sessions is when I get to work with families when either older teen or adult son or daughter has finally come out, and there's been so much tension in the room that the families can't even talk. To get them in the room and get them back talking as a family, and working through some of the hard pieces. I truly believe that when we all reach heaven as Christians, we're going to be asked this. This is a favorite quote of one of my mentors, Michael Seitzma. He said, our Creator is going to ask us, how did you handle the wounded sheep that I brought into your flock? Did you help them to heal, or did you send them away bleeding? And I believe that our responsibility as Christians, whether it be in our own families or a part of the church, we're going to have to answer to how we treat people who are either coming out of the sex industry and trying to start life all over, whether they've dealt with or dealing with homosexuality, whether it's our kids that have parents that are friends, have a parent that is transgendered or homosexual. And we want to handle that with wisdom and grace and truth and love. So, I've given you lots of recommendations on book, because y'all knew that we were not going to be able to cover all of this in an hour and 15 minutes. But I've given you a lot of recommendations on books and websites that protect. I'm just going to touch base on a couple of those real quick, and then I'll end. ProtectYoungMinds.org is probably one of the best websites out there. Go online, sign up, and it'll send you all kinds of information. One of the things they just sent and you could download is 5 Ways Porn Harms Kids Research Guide. And it gives you the harms of pornography, but it also gives you all the options on how to protect your kids. So that's the one, ProtectYoungMinds.org. I've given you a lot of books for recommendation. If you were only going to read one book, said, Debbie, I'm not much of a reader, I'm only going to read one, then read the How and When to Talk to Your Kids About Sex. Order the 4 companion books. Read those first, and then sit with your kids and read the book. Never slip the book under the door and go, here's a book you want to read. If you've got any questions, let me know. You've got to read the book with your kids and then say, I want to be open. And you state the obvious. I know this may seem awkward sometime when we're talking about sex. It feels a little awkward, too. Part of that is because sex is so private and personal. And that's why it feels a little awkward to discuss it. But we've got to be willing to discuss it. I want to be somebody that you will be willing to come to for information. And then my information's on there. I am always open if you need feedback or how to handle something. Spoke one time and a woman said, I nearly tuned you out about the kids being exposed to pornography because my kids are 7 and 5. And she said, I listened. And when I went home, she said, I realized my 7-year-old little boy had been having headaches and couldn't go to sleep at night. And she said, I realized that's been happening about 2 weeks. And she said, when you said that, I remembered I had changed some things on their Kindle and realized I had not put the blocks back on. So I just went back on to check it. And sure enough, there was all kinds of porn. And I walked her through how to handle it, how to approach him. And sure enough, he had just heard kids talk on the playground, so he Googled poop. And you can only imagine what he found. Couldn't go to sleep. So I say that not to scare you. I say that for you protect your kids. You help them be equipped for this battle that's ahead. You get educated, get informed. I'll help you in any way. But gave you a lot of resources. Some of the resources I put a little asterisk by, they're not necessarily faith-based, but great books on just how to say no. Teaching kids, we've got to teach kids to learn to go, absolutely not. You're not seeing my private parts. I don't think so. We teach kids to respect adults, but we need to teach kids when it is absolutely okay. That if anybody, whether it's somebody you know or somebody you don't know, if it's another kid or an adult, it's somebody you think you should be able to trust or not, if anybody ever wants to see your private parts or ask to touch your private parts or ask you to touch theirs, you just look at them and say, no way. I mean, don't you know private parts are special? Who didn't tell you that God designed you special, designed me special? I am not, no way. Secret? I'm not keeping a secret. We don't keep secrets in my house. I'm telling my mom and my dad, you are not going to show me your private parts. Huh, please. I mean, we need to teach them to have a voice. Because if we teach them to have a voice when they're young, they're 16, and on a date, they can have a voice and set a boundary when they're on a date. So these are all the books that I've put on your thing. I'm going to leave them out if y'all want to look at some. But thank y'all. And again, I hope I don't send you away with more anxiety, but my hope is really that if you had anxiety when you came in, that you go forward knowing that God wants you to be educated. He will help equip you. He gave you this responsibility, so he will help equip you for it and empower you to do what you need to do with your own kids. So thank you all for letting me come.